Verse number 16. This is the title of this verse is Shambhu in relation with the Jivas. I mean, this Prabhu asks the question, which Shiva, which Shambhu? Ultimately, it's all one Shiva, and it's all Vishnu, it's all Krishna. You know, it's just like, you know, what's the difference between the 11 Rudras and the Shiva of this world? Well, 11 Rudras are temporary manifestations that execute particular functions in the material universe, like destruction. And then Shiva is busy having Leela with Parvati. He's not dancing around, you know, destroying universes. And then the Shiva beyond that is Sadashiva, who's busy, you know, with Sankarshan, worshipping Sankarshan. You know, there's so many levels. You know. But it's ultimately, it's all Shiva. It's just like it's all Vishnu with so many levels, right? It's all Vishnu with, you know, Mahavishnu, the Garbhalakshaya, and so many, and it's all Radharani, but then there's different levels of Radharani. The gopis, then the queens of Dwarka, then the queens of Vaikuntha, then the Ramadevi, then the Durga, then the, you know, Uma and Savitri and you and me, you know, is all it would come down to, like the Tustas, you know, we're also expanded, you know, from the Lord. Is it not? Are we not expanded from the Lord? Of course. We're the Tatasta, we're way the farthest expansion, the farthest away from the absolute perfectional reality of divine love and ecstasy. We're holding our position. Tata. So we have to be careful. We fall off the precipice and get lost in the, you know, the Tata Samudra. Ahankaratmakam vishvam tasmat etad vyajayato. The function of Shambhu in relation to Jivas is that this universe enshrining the mundane egoistic principle has originated from Shambhu. In other words, another way of saying that, this material world of mundane ego, false ego, has been born from Shambhu. This is Shambhu's function in relation with the Jivas. Purport. The basic principle is that the Supreme Lord Himself, who is the embodiment of the principle of existence of all entities, devoid of separate egotisms. I can read that in a different way. The most original, unadulterated, pure entity is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Absolute Truth, who is free from any conception of separate egoism. Sentence 2. In this mundane world, the appearance of individual entities as separated egotistic symbols is a limited, perverted reflection of the unalloyed spiritual chit potency. And, as representing the primal masculine divine generative function Shambhu, it is united to the accommodating principle, namely the mundane female organ, which is the perverted reflection of spiritual chit potency Ramadevi. Well, that's easy enough. So another way to say that is the separate masculine the separate masculine organic egoism, that is a separate symbolic existence that appears in the material world, is only an illusion, reflection of that pure existence, and represented by the original Shambhu. That existence unites with the distorted representation of Ramadevi, the mayic or mundane female womb receptacle principle. Next sentence. At this function, Shambhu is nothing but the mere material causal principle embodying the extension and the shape of ingredient as matter. In other words, at that point, Shambhu is represented as the efficient cause only in terms of elementary matter. Again, when in the course of the progressive evolution of mundane creation, each universe is manifested, then in the principle of Shambhu, Born of the space between the two eyebrows of Vishnu, there appears the manifestation of the personality of Rudra. Again, in the course of evolution, all the universes are manifested. The evolved conception of Rudra also appears within the entity of Shambhu, who is, as previously stated, born from between the eyebrows of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, or Mahavishnu. However, the entity of Shambhu is constitutionally egoistic, ahankar atmaka, in all circumstances. Shambhu fully enshrines the mundane egoistic principle. The innumerable jivas as spiritual particles emanating from the Oversoul in the form of pencils of rays of effulgence have no relation with the mundane world when they come to know themselves to be eternal servants of the Supreme Lord. That's pretty clear, actually. When the innumerable jivas, who are sparks of chit potency, or transcendental consciousness, emanating from the chit rays of the Paramatma Mahavishnu, that's how it's described, identify themselves in the pure ego as exclusive servants of the Supreme Lord, their relation with the mayic material world stops and they become resonants of the Vaikuntha world. Next sentence. They are then incorporated into the realm of Vaikuntha. In other words, when they forget that ego and identify themselves as the Lord's eternal servants, and they want to become enjoyers of Maya, the egoistic principle of Shambhu enters their existence, enables them to falsely think they are separate enjoyers. That's the next sentence. But when they desire to lord it over Maya, forgetting their real identity, the egoistic principle Shambhu entering into their entities makes them identify themselves as separated enjoyers of the mundane entities. Hence, Shambhu is the primary principle of the egoistic mundane universe and a perverted egotism in jivas that identifies itself with their limited material bodies. In other words, Shambhu is the basic truth underlying the egoistic world and the mundane bodily ego of the jivas. Shambhu. Bolare Baba. Bam Bam Baba. 16. False ego. The Supreme Lord embodies the principle of existence of all living entities in their pure state. When living entities enter the material world, Shambhu influences the living entities with false ego. So thinking in terms of I and mine, he's the intermediary between the material energy and the spiritual energy. That's why sometimes Shiva or Shambhu is called Kshetrapala. Pala means protector and Kshetra means the field. He protects the spiritual field from the non-qualified. Those who have false ego, those who have the idea that I'm the enjoyer, I am mine, I am the body, I am great, I am perfect, I am the enjoyer, they can't cross that field. They can't cross beyond the material world. They will get impaled on the trishun, or the trident of Shambhu, which is represented by the Trigunamayi and the three phases of time, which we discussed 2 weeks ago. So he's there as the Kotwari, as the Chokidar, at the border of the spiritual world. He protects the spiritual world from entrance of non-qualified. So how do you gain entrance? When you give up false ego, then he says, come on in. As soon as false ego is given up and we manifest the true ego of Jivara Surupaya Krishnara Nityadas, that I am Krishna's eternal servant, then Shiva just says, okay, door is open. Leave the material world, enter the spiritual world. The same way, that's why he's also at every Leela Stali, in every Dham of the Lord, in Ayodhya Dham, Navadvipa Dham, Mayapur Dham, Vrindavan Dham. Wherever you find the Lord manifested in his pastimes, you will find Lord Shiva. When you go to Tirupati or Srirangam or any place, you have the what they call the abode of the Lord. Tirumala Parvat is the residence of Tirupati Balaji, Venkateshwara. It's considered that the seven hills that are there in South India, it's near Madras, about 4 hours, Balaji, that represents Vaikuntha Dham. And when you're living there, you're living in Vaikuntha. So there on the perimeters in different directions, there are different Shiva deities, Shiva temples, that are protecting people from entering Vaikuntha. So we go to Radhakund, there's Kundeshwara. We go to Nandagram, there's Nandishwara. We go to Govardhan, to Manasi Ganga, there's Chakaleshwara. We go to Kamyavan, there's Kameshwara. We come to Vrindavan for Ras Lila, there's Gopishwar. We want to enter the forest of Vrindavan, then there's Bankundi Mahadev. And we go to Mathura, and there's Bhuteshwar and Pipaleshwar. And this way, there's Shivas all over the place, thousands and millions. And so he's there. So you may go there, you may go to Vamshivat or to Nandagram, but if you go with false ego, then you don't actually go there. You're not actually allowed entrance into Nandagram. Nandishwar Mahadev, who's there in his form as Nandishwar, you see with your material eyes and you hear with your material ears, but you don't actually perceive the aprakrita lila of Krishna and Balaram. You don't see Krishna and Balaram having lunch together with Madhu Mangal and Subal and Radharani serving and Brinda Devi. You don't see all of that when you go to Nandagam, although it's going on in the morning between 6 and 8 in the morning. But you may go there at 7 o'clock in the morning, but as long as we're living in the region of the false ego or in the realm of the false ego, then Lord Shiva will not allow us to have darshan of those divine transcendental pastimes. We'll remain in the material world. And we'll just see building. And like, for example, people go there to Nandagaon and they say, oh, this is Krishna's palace? Krishna lived here? I say, oh, you can't see? Can't you see Krishna's palace? The rooftop is made of gold. The roof is made of gold. The walls are made of lapis lazuli. And the doors are made of diamonds. And they have coral. They have coral bolts on them, made of coral, red coral, diamond doors. This is the palace of Nanda Baba. It's inconceivably opulent. It's not made of mortar and cement and red bricks that were obviously made 100 years ago. So that's not visible in this plane of the false ego. But the spiritual dham is visible on the plane of pure ego. And great saints and rishis like Prabodhananda Saraswati and Baladeva Vidyabhushan and so many other acharyas who are existing on the plane of pure ego, they can see the holy dham, and then they describe its incredible beauty and aishwarya in their various scriptures, such as Vrindavan Mahim Amrita. When you read that description of Vrindavan, you say, wait a minute, where's this Vrindavan? I never saw. Someday we may see all the Sarabi cows and Krishna's footprints. The Brijvasis, they have such high regard for Krishna's footprints that even the tigers, because in Krishna's time there were very big forests, because tigers, they need big forests, elephants and tigers. Living in the forest, when they were walking along or running along, as soon as they saw Krishna's footprints, they would stop and walk around. They would walk around. So that the entire ground of Vrindavan and all the various forests, they were decorated with the beautiful lotus footprints of Krishna, the footprints of Krishna's lotus feet. Even the animals wouldn't disturb them. They would see his footprints and walk around. So this is a special Vrindavan. So more note I have about the false ego. The Supreme Lord embodies the principle of existence of all living entities in their pure state. In other words, he's the embodiment of the existence of all living entities. In other words, in our pure state, we're chit potency, chit shakti, within the body of Mahavishnu. But then when we leave, then something happens. When the living entities enter the material world, Shambhu influences the living entities with false ego. So the living entity that's us, begins to think in terms of I and mine. This is due to the connection of Shiva and Maya, who provide the material bodies, both gross and subtle, for all living entities. It all results from Shambhu impregnating Maya, or Durga. As soon as the living entity leaves Mahavishnu, he contacts Shambhu, and due to contact with Shambhu, the living entity gets false ego and a material body. If you reverse the process of creation, you can get free from the contamination and restore Krishna consciousness. So the verse that Jiva Goswami cites to support this point may not appear immediately obvious to us, but he cites a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Anyone has Bhagavad Gita? Verse 42, which you probably know the gist of it, 342, says that it's higher than this body or the working senses, and the mind is higher than the working senses, and higher than the working senses are the intelligence, and higher than the intelligence is the soul, right? Ego and soul. So we could read that. And that's what he cites. And he says that, in other words, reverse this process. We came into this world, in other words, we have a gross body, which is made of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. But those gross elements, they're more subtle than that, than the working senses or the knowledge acquiring senses, right? And then you have the ego, then Lord Shiva. So the creation begins from the subtle platform of false ego, then all the gross things come, the elements and all that. So you're going to reverse the process, which means you begin from the lower point and go to the higher point. So the lower point is what? It's the body and the senses. And so that's why he cites this verse, 342. Indriyani paranyahur indriyebhyo param manaha manasastu para buddhir yo buddhe paratastasa. The working senses are superior to dull matter. Right? The senses are above. This is dull matter. It doesn't have senses. The mind is higher than the senses. Intelligence is still higher than the mind, and the soul is even higher than the intelligence. So an interesting note that, thank you, as we're describing the false ego and how the first thing that Lord Shiva and Shambhu, they cover the living entity, the first covering is the false ego. And then from the false ego come all the other 24 elements, including the five working senses, five knowledge acquiring senses, and the gross and subtle elements and all these different things. So Lord Shiva causes our bondage in the material world, but we'll hear that also Lord Shiva, for the devotee, he can assist us in release from the material world. That's why he's the Kshetrapala. He introduces us and envelops us and covers us with the material body with the aid of his wife, Durga. And if we approach him from the devotional line that the Goswamis give us, then he can also be very favorable to us to get out of this. He can take us out of this material world also. So there's some quotes about Lord Shiva that I want to read, because we're discussing a little bit about the false ego. So as soon as the living entity leaves Mahavishnu, we contact Shambhu, and due to contact with Shambhu, the living entity gets false ego and a material body. If you reverse the process of creation, in other words, if again you contact Shambhu from a more favorable devotional viewpoint, he can be very helpful to help us get free from false ego. Then once you get free from false ego, as our material, our whole material existence and body and thinking process and conceptions of an I and mine are all ahamamati, I and mine are all expansions of false ego, which is awarded to us by Lord Shiva. So in the same way, when we come to the platform of converting our ego, which Prabhupada says the ego is converted, how do you convert the ego? You don't destroy the ego like the Buddhists, but you convert the ego from impure ego to pure ego. Pure ego is I am Krishna's, and Mamati, I am mine, and he is mine. This is pure ego. Rather than I am separate from Krishna, or I am Krishna, Ishwaraham Aham Bogi, I am the controller, I am the enjoyer, I am the creator, I am the doer, I. And all these things are mine. This is my body and my wealth and my family and my car. And this, it's I belong to Krishna, and mine, you know, in other words, I am Krishna's servant, and mine, whatever I have, it's mine, is actually his. I and mine. I am his and he is mine. So when ego is converted by the process of bhakti, then one, he becomes blessed by the demigods, he becomes blessed by Lord Shiva, and the same Lord Shiva that's keeping us, he's, you can say, impinging us, or you can say, not impaling, but he's holding us down. I don't know if there's a word, it slips my mind, but he has, in other words, if you have a big trident and you have someone on the ground, you know, and they're lying like this, and they're controlled, and I can't think of the word.
Captured.
Not captured, but they're subdued. He's subdued or subjugated. Shiva subjugated everybody with his trishum. But as soon as you convert your ego, then he lets, okay, go. Walk on the path of freedom. Like Prabhupada quotes that verse in the first canto about every, I think it's, he's talking about Narada Muni as the liberated spaceman. He says, every jiva wants to live in the free light of the spirit. You know, there's that one purport, it's a very kind of new age purport in the first canto, Prabhupada's purport. He said, the nature of every living entity is he wants to live in the free light of the spirit and move without restriction through all phases of time. It's very kind of like a new age language, the way Prabhupada worded it. So when we convert our ego by the process of bhakti, by the practice of bhakti and surrender, then we manifest the pure ego, that I am Krishna's and everything is for him. And there's nothing of mine. Everything is his, and everything is for him, and of him, and by him. Then Shiva lets us off, you know, he doesn't subjugate us, then we just walk. We walk on the road of freedom. We walk out of the material world. So in Prabhupada's books, he has a few nice quotations. In the third canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 6, verse 25, in the purport, he said, the false ego of materialistic identity is controlled by Rudra. And then he says, to get released from false ego, we have to worship Sankarshan. There's expansion from Balaram. Sankarshan also can also be worshipped through Lord Shiva. The snakes on the body of Lord Shiva are representatives of his deity, Sankarshan. And Lord Shiva is always absorbed in meditating on Sankarshan. One who worships Lord Shiva as a devotee of Sankarshan or Balaram can be released from the material false ego. Canto 3, chapter 26, verse 21. And then the same chapter, verse 61, Prabhupada says, Lord Shiva is the presiding deity of false ego. So therefore, as I mentioned before, Sanatan Goswami and other Raghunath Das Goswami, Rupa Goswami, they were always very much, we follow Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami in their sadhaka roop and also in their siddha roop. As Rati Mandri or Rupa Mandri, Sri Rupa Mandri Pada, there are sampat, the wealth of our bhajan sampat is to attain the grace of Rupa Mandri and Rupa Goswami. So what they teach us as sadhakas is the preeminent position of Lord Shiva and how essential his understanding is and his mercy is for the advancement of bhakti. In one of Prabhupada's purports, he says, if you want to know what is pure devotion, if you want to know what is pure devotion, what it means to be a devotee, and how to love Krishna, then you must study this book, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Brihad Bhagavatamrita was written by Sanatana Goswami. And in there's chapters about Lord Shiva and Indra and Brahma and different personalities. Because Narada Muni is searching the universe to find out who is the greatest devotee of the Lord. Which devotee has received the greatest mercy from the Lord? And finally he goes from one devotee to the next, and each devotee is glorifying the other one. There's Shiva, and then there's Hanuman and Prahlad, and the Pandavas and the Yadavas and Uddhava. And then finally it comes to the Vrijvasis and the cowherd boys, and then the Sakis and the Gopis, and finally Radharani, the greatest devotee of the Lord. So this book is very nicely portrays the identity and position of Lord Shiva. So as we advance in the practice of bhakti, we have what they call Diksha Guru and Shiksha Guru. So bhakti, in order for it to progress properly, we need instructions of how to do bhajan. It's called bhajana kriya shiksha. Being taught how to do bhajan. How to pray, how to worship, how to meditate, how to do lila smaran or manasi seva, how and when and why, and to what extent. All these things are taught by guru, whether it's Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru, someone. And that can also be Chaitya Guru. Who is Chaitya Guru? The Antaryami, the guru in the heart. So Prabhupada gives us some indication here from these books, from his books about the position of Lord Shiva. And if we follow his further indication and read books like Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we'll understand more how he's very favorable. And being Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu, he's very kind to the devotees also, because he's also a devotee. What mantra does Lord Shiva chant? He chants Hari Ram, Hari Ram, Ram Ram, Hari Hari. So he doesn't chant Krishna's name directly, Krishna, but he chants Hari Ram, because Ram, for him, Ram means Balaram. Right? Sankarshan, Balaram. So that's a little bit about the false ego. There's one note, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, or Prabhupada, but the note says, Krishna consciousness means, what does it mean? Getting free from Shambhu and Maya and coming back to one's original condition. So if you want to get free from someone, then it's nice to get their favor, get their mercy. The devotees that are sitting in this room are very fortunate, because when you come from England or in Germany, there aren't too many temples of Lord Shiva there. There may be a few because of the influx of Indian people over there building temples. But when you come to Vrindavan, all of a sudden you get introduced to this very interesting temple, this very interesting murti, a Shiva Linga, and the Yoni of Parvati. And you have all kinds of, you know, speculative ideas or misconceptions, what it all means and what it all represents. But now we're understanding a little more from Brahma Samhita, that they represent the creative principle, male and female principle. And there's also some Puranic story about one sage who I can't remember exactly where it's from, but I've heard it many times, that one sage came to visit in Kailash Hill to visit Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva was enjoying with Parvati. She was sitting on his lap. And Lord Shiva, he doesn't really have to bow down to anybody in this universe because he's Shiva Tattva. I mean, he bows down to Sankarshan and offers respect to Narada Muni, although it's his brother. He's completely free to do whatever he wants. So this one sage came to visit him, and he didn't pay much attention to him. He was just absorbed in being with his wife, Durga, Parvati. So the sage, he said, "What's this? You know, you're just, you know, you're." And the sage had some of his associates with him, disciples. He said, "I come to visit you, and you don't pay any attention. You're just enjoying with your wife. You're naked. As I curse you that you'll be worshipped, the only way you'll be worshipped is that your genital will be worshipped in the material world. Only your genital will be worshipped." Just like the story of Brahma. Brahma's Lord Brahma, there's a whole story about he was doing a jugya, and his wife Savitri, she was, that's a long time ago, I heard the story, but when you do a jugya, the queen is supposed to be with the king, so she wasn't there, and then all the demigods were there, and the jugya was going past the auspicious time to do this jugya. So he said, what to do? He consulted his priest, and then they said, well, you have to get another queen, you have to get another wife to sit next to you. So then Indra or someone, he went and he got this girl named Gayatri. It's a long story. There's different ways it's told. But she became instantly appointed to be the wife of Brahma, and she sat in the sacrifice, and Savitri came a little late because, you know, she was putting on her makeup or something. Whatever, ladies sometimes takes a while. And so she got late, and she had a lotus flower in her hand, and she said, hey, who's this next to my husband? And then she was really angry, and she threw the lotus flower down. And a lotus flower landed in a place in Rajasthan. And it's a place called Pushkar. Pushkar means, it's a name for lotus, I believe. Kar means Karani, means a lake. And Push means, Pushpa means, it's a lake created by the lotus flower, as far as I understand. So she threw that down. She said, what's this? You know, it said, and she was very angry. She says, all right, you will only be worshipped one place in the whole universe, and that's where my lotus flower fell, you know, in my anger. And she had no idea where it was. And it was in the middle of the desert. Brahma is like worshipped in the middle of the desert in Rajasthan. Ever been there? Ever been to Pushkar? How many been to Pushkar? Oh, yeah. I never been. It's a famous place to go, and it's important for us because we're in the Brahma Sampradaya. Sometimes you may think, oh, what is this Pushkar? But all of our Gaudiyas, you know, followers of Bhakti Santa Saraswati, they go there. They do visit there because of the connection between Lord Brahma. We are the Brahma Gaudiya Sampradaya. So he's cursed like that to only be worshipped there, and Parvati cursed Shiva to be worshipped in the world. You don't see it. Generally, the official form of worshipping Lord Shiva is Linga. So there's one itihas or pranic story about that. So I think I read verse 17. Is it? Yeah, 17. Atatais tri vidarveshar lilam udvattaha kila yoga nidra bhagavati tasya shir iva sangata. Thereupon the same great personal Godhead, assuming the threefold forms of Vishnu, Prajapati and Shambhu, entering into the mundane universe, plays the pastimes of preservation, creation and destruction of this world. This pastime is contained in the mundane world. Hence it being perverted, the Supreme Lord, identical... 17, is it right? The Supreme Lord, identical with Mahavishnu, prefers to consort with Goddess Yoganidra, the constituent of his own spiritual chit potency, full of the ecstatic trance of eternal bliss appertaining to his own divine personality. There's another way that's told. I can read that. Thereafter, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, having entered the universe in the guise of Vishnu, Brahma, and Shambhu, enacts his pastimes of maintenance, creation, and annihilation. These pastimes pertain to the mundane world. Thus, since they are of a lower order, the Lord remains aloof, consorting with Yoganidra, who is an aspect of his own spiritual chit potency. She is the female embodiment of his trance of intrinsic divine ecstasy. So he's in a trance, but he is like one part of the trance, and another part of the trance, that trance is called Yoga Nidra. The other part, which is part of his own potency, is his expansion as the Rama. Right? Purport. The dislocated portions of divinity, namely Prajapati and Shambhu, both identifying themselves as entities who are separate from the divine essence, sport with their respective non-spiritual achit consorts, namely Savitri Devi, Uma Devi, who are the perverted reflections of the spiritual chit potency. Right? In other words, you can say, as separated parts, Vibhinamsha, of the entity of the Lord, both Prajapati and Shambhu possess separate egoism, and thus each consort with their own potencies, or consorts, named Savitri and Uma, who are material reflections of the spiritual chit potency. Last sentence. The Supreme Lord Vishnu is the only Lord of the spiritual chit potency, Rama or Lakshmi. Right? Only Krishna or Vishnu, he can enjoy the spiritual chit potency personified as Rama. Rama means Sri or the goddess of fortune. The verse mentions that, the word Sri, Bhagavati. Yoga Nidra, Bhagavati, Sri Sangata. Sri Sangata, right? In the Sanskrit. Yoga Nidra Bhagavati, Sri Sangata. He associates with Sri. Sri means the goddess of fortune, who is known as Bhagavati, or Rama, or Yogamaya, in his ecstatic trance of Yoga Nidra. So, let's see, what do we have about that? 17. This is something also about these prototype demigods that were kind of, you know, are being alluded to here. This verse is talking about the situation in each material universe, verse 17, each individual universe. The Prajapati, right? Now, because before we talked about Hiranyagarbha Brahma, which is the one Hiranyagarbha Brahma for all the, you know, that all the, for the one for all the universes, and from him all the Brahmas. Now we're talking about in one universe, there's the Vishnu, and there's the Prajapati, who is known as Brahma, and there's Shambhu, right? It's kind of the way it's going back and forth, but this is what it is. This is not, this Prajapati that's mentioned in this verse is not the prototype Hiranyagarbha Brahma or the Shambhu. After the creation of the Brahmanda, Mahavishnu then enters each individual universe in the form of Garbhadakshay Vishnu. Brahma and Shiva sport with their wives or consorts Savitri and Uma. Shiva and Brahma come from Mahavishnu, but they never think, I am Mahavishnu. Savitri and Uma emanate from Rama Devi. So Brahma and Shiva are doing vilas, or pastime leela, with their wives, Savitri and Uma. So, as I was disappointed, we're being reminded over and over again at this point, from the original, from this, this is nice that this is on the board, from this original center point of this hexagram, hexagonal figure, represents Sri Gokul from the divine Shakti and the divine Shaktiman, Radha and Krishna. Everything expands. The whole idea of Brahma, what is the whole idea of Brahma Samhita? As I mentioned when we initiated the course, the whole idea of Brahma Samhita is to increase our attachment, our understanding, and our love for Radha and Krishna. It's not to confuse us and bewilder us. It's to trace everything back to the center point. Just like the symptom of an advancing devotee is he tries to see Krishna in everything. And there's so many stories about seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. And we always make the joke that when, you know, the new devotee says, when he gets a big feast, yes, this is Krishna's mercy. But when he suffers, he doesn't see that this is Krishna's mercy. You know, oh, what a feast. Oh, Krishna's mercy. Oh, I've got a fever, a headache, a cold. My throat's choked up. Oh, I can't think. I can't chant. I can't read. I can't play. I can't look around. I can't enjoy the world. I'm really suffering, Prabhu. I'm suffering, Prabhu. I'm suffering, Prabhu. And then you say, oh, great, Krishna's mercy. Hey, this is not Krishna's mercy. You want a crack? You know, I'm suffering. Don't, you know, cry for me and wipe my tears and bring me some, you know, aspirin and some medicine and call a doctor and, you know, like that. so the whole idea is we hear all these verses and we're supposed to be reminded of our Ishtadev. We're not devotees of Lord Shiva. We're not devotees of Shambhu, Uma, Prajapati, Hiranyagarbha. Ultimately, who are we talking about in all these Leelas, Srishti Leela and Mahavishnu and Garbhadaksha? Who are we talking about? Our Ishtadev. Who is our Ishtadev? Radhasham Sundar, Krishna Balaram, right? Because all of these personalities are all simply expansions of them. That's why Jiva Goswami says, remember, I want to remind everybody, who are Uma and who are Savitri? Well, they're the wives of Shiva and Brahma. Well, where do they come from? They're expansions from Rama. Who's Rama? Rama is the spiritual wife or consort of Mahavishnu. Well, where does Mahavishnu come from? He comes from Sankarshan. Where does he come from? He comes from Mahasa. You know, where does Rama come from? She comes from Radharani. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, that's what it's all about. Yeah, Radha and Krishna, right. Radhe, Radhe. Radhe, Radhe. Radhe Shyam. So the verses, you know, creation, pralaya, srishti, and shambhu, and the glance, and the jiva, it's basically I and mine. I am Krishna's, I belong to Radha and Krishna, and Radha and Krishna are mine. So this is the true ego, which we should filter our reality through the true ego. That I belong to Krishna, and Krishna belongs to me. That is the Brijbasi's consciousness. That I belong to Krishna. I am sold out animal. I am completely everything for him. Whatever he wants, you can crush me by your loving embrace. Right? This is the Vrindavan conception. Ashvishyamam parvatam panashtumam adarshanam mamatam purotuva yathatatava vidadanta lampato mat prananatasu sevanaparha. You're my prananath. You're the heart of my life. The Lord of my life. You're my essence. My everything. Whether you crush me by your loving embrace or break my heart by never seeing me or playing with me or doing whatever you want to do and fine, if that gives you happiness, then fine, that's great. But no matter what happens, I am always yours and you're always mine. And you're always mine. I can say that. I can say that you're mine. That you're mine because my love is pure. Because my love is completely desperate love and completely surrendered love and completely selfless love and self-forgetful. My love is so deep and so vast and so crystal clear and pure that I've completely forgotten everything about myself and I become completely identified with you. When the gopis are in separation from Krishna and Ras Lila and they're searching for him, they become so tadatmika. Tadatmika means Atmika means body, mind, and soul. They identify so much, become one with Krishna, that one gopi says, "Hey, I'm Putana, and I've come, and then I want to. Oh, hello, Mother Yashoda. I'm Putana. I want to see your baby. Feed your baby. Oh, yes, please." And then, so one gopi becomes Krishna. They completely identify as Krishna, and then the other one. The one gopi picks up Krishna. You know, how can you know one gopi pick up another gopi and throw on her shoulder and runs away? And then the one hits. And they're totally identified. The acharyas say that at that moment they're completely self-forgetful. They're so much identifying with Krishna. So this is the epitome of transcendental prema and love, that they go so mad and so much. So this is the whole idea of this study is to bring us to this point of Krishna Prema. So in the verse again, we're reminded of Yoga Nidra. So there's more notes about Yoga Nidra we can read in relation to this verse. Although Vishnu, Mahavishnu, or any of the Vishnu, they just say Vishnu, is within the material world, he has nothing to do with it. He is enjoying Swarupananda. Right? Prabhupada had one disciple that named that. Siddha Swarupananda. Right? Siddha Swarup in Hawaii. Swarupananda. Swa, my own, rup, form, bliss. You know, you're blissful within yourself. The ecstatic bliss that is self-contained and produced within his own transcendental form. Swarupananda. In this verse 17, it explains that even though Vishnu has entered the material world, he has absolutely no connection with it. He is always beyond and outside the material world in his Swarupananda. How does Vishnu do all this? By his chit potency, his own spiritual energy. He always remains in a state of samadhi called yoga nidra. When we conditioned souls are asleep, it is called nidra, right? Nidra means sleep. It's not yoga nidra. I discussed this a little bit before. What does that mean, nidra? It means that we forget everything about our waking identity and reality. Just like Acharyas explained that when Shukadeva Goswami was in samadhi, that he was in samadhi, but it doesn't mean that he was inactive and not doing anything. Samadhi means enjoying all types of pastimes with Krishna. This is, in the yoga conception of samadhi, means samadhi, that all the intelligence or everything is fixed on one point and there's total non-activity, non-involvement with the senses. The mind is still, the senses are still, and it's called like the fourth state of consciousness, turiya. It's called turiya, which is equivalent to the state of deep sleep, where the person goes in such a deep sleep, the next day they remember, I was sleeping very deeply yesterday. It's very rare that most people sleep on a level of passion. Passion means you have many dreams, and you may forget them, but because the turiya state of consciousness, which is mentioned in the third canto, is considered to be almost like the liberated platform, Brahmabhuta platform, where the soul is separate from the body and mind. Because it very rarely happens, but sometimes the next day after sleeping, this is an ordinary conditioned soul, it's not a yogi, an ordinary conditioned soul, he experiences, yes, I distinctly remember that yesterday I was sleeping very deeply. I remember it. You know, I was observing that I was sleeping very deeply. So this samadhi, this is like the yoga samadhi, is something like this. It's kind of a slumber and which is different from the samadhi of someone like Shukadeva Goswami. He was in the womb of his mother for 16 years or 13 years, whatever it was, but he was in samadhi. And he wasn't just in a void of forgetfulness or one-pointedness or in deep sleep, but he's actually absorbed in the lilas of the Lord. And he was a great devotee of Radharani, because in the Brahmanda Puran, he explains in his previous life, he was a shuk. He was a male parrot who would do service to Radharani, sing Sanskrit poetry glorifying Krishna's Nam, Rup, and Guna, and Leela. So that he was so much devoted to Radharani that in this life, if he was to mention the name of Radharani, that he would enter a state of samadhi. And he would stay in that state of samadhi for 6 months. In that state of samadhi. And in that state of samadhi, Shukadeva Goswami would be experiencing the whole gamut or the whole panorama of Braj Leela. Through hearing the name of Radharani. Radharani would be like a key or something. Like you have, sometimes people have a lock on their computer of a one word, like Giriraj or whatever, Rasgulla or something. You type in the word Rasgulla and then the computer, you can get into it and then do so many things. So for him, the word Radha, or Radharani, would open his, would send him into a state of samadhi where he would leave this world. He would be in his body, but he would appear to be in a state of trance, but he would be entering into the pastimes of Radha and Krishna and serving there for 6 months. And so he controlled himself, and he didn't mention directly in any verses of Bhagavatam, he didn't mention Radharani's name. Although one time in one verse, he said, Anyaradita, in the 10th canto, Anyaradita. He was saying, he's describing the different gopis. He said there was one gopi, among all the gopis, there's one gopi who worshipped Krishna more than any of the others. Anya means no other. Like we say, Harinam, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Anasteva, 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 Gatir, Anyata. So Anya Radhita means no other. There's no other way but chanting Hare Krishna for perfection. So he said, there's one gopi that worshipped like no other gopi worship. And as soon as he just said that, some syllables that were like that, he started to exhibit, because in samadhi, one may, before one enters the state of samadhi, may exhibit all simultaneously all eight symptoms of sattvic bhav. Ashru, what is it? Romancha, Kampa, Ashru, Pralaya, Vaivarna, Shweta, you know, all these different symptoms. Hair standing and then trembling of voice, change of bodily color, fainting, and all these things. There's eight different symptoms. So he started to exhibit these, and he could perceive them. He said, I'm losing it. You know, or something like, I'm losing it. I better get a grip on myself. I better hold on to myself and pull myself back, because Parikshit's, he's hanging on my every word. He's literally hanging on my every word, because he's going to die in 7 days. And because of hearing this Harikatamrita, he's drinking this nectar of Harikatamrita. It is nourishing his body, mind, and soul. So he's completely forgotten everything about his body, mind, and soul. And he hasn't slept for 1 second. He hasn't drank in one drop of water, and hasn't eaten one grain of food in the last 4 days. So he was just, it was like the fourth day of the Saptaha, 7 day Saptaha. It was around the fourth day or fifth day. It was in the 10th canto, and then finally 11th and 12th. So Sukadeva Goswami controlled himself, and then he went on to finish the Bhagavatam, and then for the benefit. So that his samadhi was, so the samadhi of Mahavishnu is a state of enjoyment of all types of pastimes. Therefore, Mahavishnu is enjoying Anandamaya, Chitsuka, spiritual happiness. And Mahavishnu is not alone in his state of samadhi or yoga nidra. Sometimes he enjoys pastimes with Ramadevi or other persons like Narada. So this Narada Muni is not only that Ramadevi can enter into the state of samadhi or yoga nidra to enjoy with Mahavishnu, but also Narada Muni can enter. While Mahavishnu is in yoga nidra, some type of pastimes are always going on there. There's some stories in the life of Srinivasacharya. I believe it was Srinivasacharya. He was doing his bhajan, Manasi Seva. So he's a very advanced devotee, Srinivasacharya. He wrote the Six Goswami song, and he was one of the three Prabhus, Acharya Prabhu, Srinivas, Shamananda, and Naratam. Naratam, Srinivas, and Shamananda. These are the three Prabhus. Mahashaya Prabhu, Acharya Prabhu, and the three Prabhus are there. So they're glorified in the Prem Dwani and throughout the Gaudiya Sampradaya. They say, Srinivas, Naratam, Srinivas, Shamananda, Prabhu Traya Ki. The Prabhu Traya, the three Prabhus. So they were great, exalted devotees. So Srinivas, he, in his meditation, he entered into a state of samadhi. But it was not a state of non-activity. You may look and see that he's non-active. But in his internal state, he was engaging in pastimes, in his Manjari Roop, in his Siddha Deha. And he's in samadhi, and he's in a pastime. The particular pastime is that his Gurudev and his Manjari Saroop was in great distress. He was in great distress. Why? Because Radharani was bathing in Radhakunda somewhere, and she lost one of her rings. And she asked this Manjari to find it. And that, you know, when they went, Radharani went to Suryakunda, and so she asked this Manjari to find it. So she was looking, she couldn't find. Then Srinivas, in his samadhi, he entered into that lila. And then he saw his guru's distress, and so he started helping his guru by diving into Radhakunda and looking for that ring. So then he stayed in samadhi for 3 days. Srinivasacharya was in samadhi, engaged in this pastime for 3 days. And then he found the ring and gave it to his guru Sakhi or Gurudev in Manjari Roop, and then she gave it to Radharani. So this shows the example, a type of yoga nidra or type of samadhi, from the level of a sadhaka, or at least a realized sadhaka of this world. So this is something about yoga nidra. It is a very dynamic state of pastimes. So we'll cover verse 18 tomorrow. Sri Rama Samhita Ki Jai.